And we have a jam-packed afternoon session as well. Earlier, I was talking to my good friend, Carrie Cipollo, who owns the independent science company here at Purdue in Lafayette. And we just have a new chapter in there. Carrie, if you're listening, we have a new chapter in Lafayette. Dennis Manning is the president of that chapter. So we're proud to have your old stomping grounds represented here. It brings me great privilege and honor to present our next speaker. I've heard him speak several times, and I always, always enjoy his comments and his thoughts. He is the newest member of Independent Science Company here at Purdue University. He is also a scientist in his own right. He's also the survivor of the World Trade Center bombing and with those airplanes and them falling down around him. But he'll tell his story better than I can. So here is Mike Hinkson to bring us his story. Mike, congratulations and thank you for being with us.
Wow. Jeez. Okay. Well, I was also thinking about doing a science experiment this morning, and Carrie would love me to do it, but I think in the spirit of time, I will just talk about some of the technology. And I was thinking a lot about what to discuss this morning, and I also realized that I should start my video just to have it on for those who might want such things. Some of us don't need that, but some people do, so it's okay. Fred Allen, the old radio comedian, once said that television was called the new medium because that's as good as it's ever going to get. I'll leave that to you to think about. But anyway, I think as we talk about our future and moving forward with our future, it's also important to look at the past. I think something that we all too often don't do is to have a lot of perspective based on history. We seem to forget history a lot in our world. And our politicians do it all the time. But, you know, the reality is we shouldn't. Some of our better politicians don't. And I think that we shouldn't. So I think as we look at moving forward, we also have to look at where we came from and use that to understand why and how we move forward. So I'm going to talk a little bit about both going back and going forward. Last year, my gosh, has it already been a year, at the National Federation of the Blind of California convention, I happened to have the opportunity to have breakfast with Joe Xavier, who is the director of the California Department of Rehabilitation. And he asked me a question, which was, do you think that we're better off now than we were in the past? And I said, well, I think it kind of depends. What do you think? And he said, well, sure, we're better because we have a lot of technology that we didn't have. The National Federation of the Blind brought us, with Ray Kurzweil, the Kurzweil reading machine. And later that became the KNFB Reader Mobile, now which is a part of Newsline with Newsline 3.0. For those who don't have it, please go get it. Newsline's great. And it gives you the ability to use a mobile device to take a picture of a printed page and read it out loud. The original Kurzweil reading machine actually had to build up an image of a page because we didn't have digital cameras back in the mid to late 1970s. That is, we didn't have what we have today. So actually what the camera did was it was on a flatbed scanner that moved across the page, dropped down, moved back across, and it actually built up a line-by-line image of the entire page, and then it recognized it. So the whole process took about a minute to get to the point where you could read something. I know about that because I was involved in that project. Today, you hear a click, and a couple seconds later, it's reading the page out loud. The computers are so much better than they were. The technology is so much better. So Joe Xavier said, we have so much better technology. We have IRA, and I had worked for IRA and helped introduce IRA to the National Federation of the Blind and to the world. And IRA is for those who don't know, a visual interpreter. Literally, I can use a mobile device, call an agent who is specially trained to describe things, and I can get whatever information that I need in order to accomplish whatever task I want. I don't regard that as a problem. Some people have said, well, but you know, you're using eyesight to accomplish something and, you know, we should be completely independent. And my response is, you know, I will use whatever tools make sense for me to use to be able to be independent. And that includes turning on lights for those light dependent people, those non-blind people who need them. And sometimes lights can be very helpful, but we all have different technologies we use. I've always maintained, by the way, that sighted or light dependent people have just as much of a disability as we do who are blind. Because, and I don't know that we have a disability, but that's the term people use. I'm just not going to get into a debate about what the right terminology ought to be. But light dependent people, until the time of Thomas Edison, lit fires or used stars and used the sun and so on to accomplish tasks. And when it was dark, they couldn't do a lick of work because they didn't have light. Thomas Edison invented the light bulb. And what is the light bulb? If we go by the Americans with Disabilities Act, it's a reasonable accommodation for light dependent people who need that technology in order to perform. And companies accept that readily, and they provide the reasonable accommodation of lights, whether it be through windows, whether it be through lights in the ceiling, whether it be through providing monitors that have their own kind of light and display information so that a person can see it. It's really interesting, though, that logic doesn't always come true when we're talking about blind people. That is to say, go to a place and get a job or try to get a job, and they may say, well, what do you need to do the job? And you talk about something like JAWS, and they may say, well, what does it cost? And you tell them, well, we can't afford to do that. Well, they afforded to get coffee machines, even touchscreen coffee machines, those discriminatory things, for employees so that they could have coffee and be comfortable. They provide lights. They provide all sorts of things for sighted people. It's just as reasonable for us to expect that the technologies that allow us to do the same work as other people, although we may not do it exactly the same way, it is just as reasonable for us to expect that employers provide that technology to us. So the technology's there, and I agreed with Joe that the technology's there. The gotcha and the but is the other part of it. That is to say, the acceptance that blind people can work on the job, the acceptance that blind people can work in the sciences, the acceptance that it's perfectly reasonable and inclusive and appropriate for us to expect to get the technologies that we need to do the job just like everyone else does. So are we better off than we were? Yes and no. Nowadays, everything is on television, that new medium, because that's as good as it's ever going to get. I see any number of commercials, and by the way, I'll use the word to see because the dictionary defines to see in part as to perceive. So I don't have any problem with using see. I don't think it necessarily just means eyesight. But I observe many commercials on television today. I watch these commercials, and there's a lot of music and other stuff, and not one single word is spoken. And I have no idea what their commercials are about. I even saw one for Donald Trump the other day, and there was no verbiage in it at all. Well, that's okay. Anyway, there are a lot of commercials that are coming out where there's no talking at all. That's discriminatory. Besides that, it's really wretched, horrible, atrocious marketing by any standard. Why? How many people just sit there at their television sets and wait for the commercials so they can watch them? They usually get up, they'll go pour a drink or go to the bathroom or whatever. And these people who create these commercials that don't have any words are missing out on making sure that people are hearing at least what they're talking about. The music doesn't do it. Anyway, I think that the problem is that as technology has evolved, both for us and especially for the rest of the world, we have seen some attitudes go backward because of the fact that in reality, we don't get the same access. In the world of us who are blind, the National Federation of the Blind had to file major lawsuits to get Google to, as they were providing tens of millions of books, make those accessible. We had to fight and take a case all the way through the courts so that blind people could pass the bar exam. Well, and of course, we want them to pass the bar exam, although, gosh, there are a lot of lawyers around. Well, we won't go into the lawyer jokes, Ron. But there are perfectly good reasons why blind lawyers should be able to take the bar exam and use what they need in order to have access to the information. And we had to fight that case. This morning, we were talking about blind parents having the same rights as other people. And as all this technology becomes available, it also means we have a lot more stuff going on social media. And the reality of that is that all too often, all too quickly, people start to make comments like, well, how could blind people raise children and so on? And it goes all over Facebook and all over Twitter. And a lot of people go, yeah, well, they're blind. How can they do that? So I think that technology is a double-edged sword. Although I think it's great that we have it, I think that there are a lot of good pieces of technology that have made it possible for us to do more. We also see a lot of the same attitudes coming out in most of the world. As President Brown said, I am a part of Independent Science. I consult with Independent Science and help with the marketing of some of the products and help in other ways because I've been involved in science and philosophy of science, if you will, for my adult life. And Independent Science was started back in 2009 by Kerry Cipolla, who did it at and with Purdue University and the Purdue Foundation. And what Independent Science is all about is the same goals that the National Federation of the Blind has. That is to say, blind people ought to be able to take the same classes as everyone else. Blind people ought to be able to have access to doing the same laboratory work as everyone else. Blind people ought to be able to have the same opportunities in science overall, if to speak in general terms, as do sighted people. My master's degree is in physics from the University of California at Irvine. And when I was going to college, let me tell you what life was like. Physics books were not available. And my master's being in physics, I needed lots of physics books and lots of math books. Physics books were not available. The only way to get the specific texts that I needed was to find people who knew Braille, who volunteered and actually spent their time hand transcribing those books using a Perkins Brailler. There was one transcriber, my favorite transcriber, Eleanor Savage, who I believe is no longer with us. Eleanor every year took a cruise around the world. But what did she do when she's sitting out on deck and enjoying the ocean? She was transcribing books. She loved to do it on a cruise because she got lots of good quality transcribing time in and kept me, among others, in physics books and science technology books and math books. That was extremely important to her, fortunately for me. So books were transcribed. I have a number of them still here in my office and enjoy pulling them out every so often and just marveling at what was done to make things available. Now, of course, it's different. Mostly the technology allows for the books in electronic form to be sent somewhere where they can be interpreted and much more quickly converted to Braille and embossed on paper as opposed to the thermoform plastic that oftentimes was used so that more than one person could get access to the same book. There was a lot of stuff that was done in the past that we still look back on and ought to be aware of because it's part of where we came from. There are lots of books at the National Center. Some of them were hand transcribed. Some of them came from a variety of sources. I remember Dr. Maurer often talking about Bartlett's famous quotations and how that book eventually came to be. And you know, Braille still and always will be the most important thing for me and all of us as blind people because it is our reading and writing language. If educators want to say, well, why do you need Braille? Because you could listen to books. Then my response is, why do you teach sighted kids to read print? Let them just watch TV and we'll really see how medium TV is. The fact of the matter is Braille is as important to me as it is to have print for a sighted child. Teaching Braille to me should be as important as teaching print to a sighted child. It's got to be that way. And that is the attitude that has not changed. And that's the problem with technology because people try to race forward with technology without changing changing attitudes as we go. I think we've got to really push that. And we do, but probably we need to think of other and more clever ways to do it. Let me give you a little bit more historic background of where we were and where we are now. I imagine most everyone here has life insurance, or probably will or should. As late as the early 1980s, none of us could get life insurance because insurance companies said that we were a higher risk. We had a higher mortality rate. We were going to die off sooner than sighted people. People in wheelchairs were going to die off sooner than people who weren't in wheelchairs. And even if there was no medical condition other than being blind or being paralyzed or whatever, the insurance company said, just by virtue of having those characteristics, you're going to die off sooner. Jim Omvig, we all know who Jim Omvig is or ought to. Jim Omvig once asked somebody who was associated with the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, you know, you say that blind people are a higher risk than other people of dying, and so you won't give us insurance. And this gentleman said, yes. Mr. Omvig said, well, all insurance companies base all of their decisions on mathematical models. They base it on data. They base it on statistics. We'd love to see the models that say that we're a higher risk. Can we do that? And this gentleman said, sure, would love to show them to you. 6 months went by and Mr. Omvig finally contacted the guy again and said, so where are those models? You know, and the gentleman said, well, we're still trying to get the specifics for you. And Mr. Omvig said, you don't have them, do you? And the guy finally admitted that they didn't. Mr. Omvig said, you know why you don't have them? You don't have them because they don't exist. So in 1979, Dr. Jernigan, I remember this pretty well, suddenly sent out word through the state presidents to all chapter presidents and others, a phone tree. Back in those days, everything was done with the phone, and we had a great communication system. If there is one thing about the National Federation of the Blind that a lot of other organizations don't understand still, and don't have, it is our ability to communicate with all of our members, and we do it well. And we did it well back then. And Dr. Jernigan said, please contact your legislators. Get them to start exploring introducing bills into their local state houses that would say that you can no longer discriminate against blind people, and other groups got added into it. So it was blind people and other persons with disabilities, essentially. You cannot discriminate and deny us insurance unless you can show actuarial statistics or evidentiary data that demonstrates that we are a higher risk. Now, we're not talking about someone who may have cancer, or back in those days, there was some speculation that diabetes might actually be a higher risk. And diabetes could, of course, result in blindness depending on the type of diabetes that you have. But the fact of the matter is that Dr. Jernigan said, we're dealing with blindness here. And so insurance companies cannot and should not be able to treat us differently simply because we're blind. And the word went out, and the massive avalanche of people contacting legislators began. I was living in Massachusetts at the time. I was elected as the legislative officer of the state of Massachusetts, and I worked with a Representative Al Sagacy in Massachusetts to get legislation passed there. We had opposition from the insurance companies who said this was wrong. And Representative Sagacy was good. He said, really? Prove it. And of course, they never could. The legislation passed. And by, I don't remember the exact year, maybe 1984 or 85 in that arena, every state had passed legislation saying that you could not discriminate unless you could prove something was a higher risk. And you know what? We're still getting insurance today because no one's ever demonstrated that blindness is a higher risk because they can't. Now, what's really funny, and the final chapter of that story, was that the National Association of Insurance Commissioners was also going to pass a model regulation, basically saying for their organization, the words of no discrimination based on any kind of disability unless you could prove actuarial statistics and so on. The night before that legislation was supposed to be passed, and I heard this story sort of third hand, but as I understand it, somebody from the insurance industry called Dr. Jernigan and said, you know, you're the organization that has all the expertise on blind people. This horrible regulation is going to be passed by the National Association of Insurance Commissioners tomorrow. Can't you help us and help us demonstrate that you guys are a higher risk? Because we certainly don't want you to be hurt. And Dr. Jernigan, as I understand it, sort of chuckled and said, do you know who you're calling? We're the ones that got all those rules and regulations in every state passed. We're not going to help you because you don't know what you're talking about and you're wrong. And he disconnected the call. Next day, the regulation passed. The attitudes in so many ways back then still exist today. The technology doesn't fix all of them unless we demand it. So going back to independent science and what Cary Cipolla did, Cary Cipolla began to work with Vernier Software and Technology and actually developed a device called the Talking Lab Quest. It's a device, and I have one here. It's a device that's about 6 inches going from left to right, 3.5 inches going from front to back, and about an inch thick. And it verbalizes, thank you very much, it verbalizes whatever the Lab Quest is asked to talk about. What the LabQuest actually is a box that has the ability to have a number of different what are called sensors and probes connected to it. So, for example, you could connect a temperature sensor that would tell you what the temperature of any substance is. You could put it in a cup of ice water and it would tell you what the temperature is. You could put it in a cup of water and drop airborne pills or Alka-Seltzer pills into it. And you know, when you drop plop, plop, fizz, fizz, Alka-Seltzer into water, it starts to fizz and so on. What you normally don't know is that the temperature of the water drops. It's called an endothermic reaction, and I'm not a chemist, but basically what's happening is that the pills, as they fizz and dissolve, are drawing energy in from their surroundings to do what they need to do. And as that energy is pulled in, it cools the water, because that's what happens when you pull energy from one space. That's why there's not a lot of energy in outer space. And that's why there's a lot of hot air in Washington, D.C. There's just way too much energy there. It's fun to pick on politicians and keep it clean. Everybody gets it. Everybody gets to be picked on. But the reality is that the LabQuest could sense that. When I took chemistry classes in college and in high school, I didn't get to do my own experiments. I couldn't access any of the equipment. I couldn't read the change in color on litmus paper to tell whether the pH of something was changing. pH, it's a scale. It's a scale that goes from 1 to 7. And basically, 4 is what's called neutral. As the numbers go down, you see that a substance is becoming more acidic. And if they're going up, the substance is becoming more base. So it's all about chemistry. The ideal thing for our purposes here is to have a neutral pH or a pH of 4. Typically, you measure that by dipping a special piece of paper into like a liquid, and as it changes color, you see what the pH is doing. Blind people have a great advantage now using the Talking Lab Quest, because we can actually stick a probe into something and measure the pH directly and get an exact number as to what it is. So devices, specifically the Talking Lab Quest, now give me the ability and the opportunity to access the information that I couldn't get any other way. So in other words, nowadays, because I can access that information with one of up to like 75 or 80 different sensors that are available with the Talking Lab Quest, I can actually participate and do my own science experiments, or be as much a part of doing an experiment as my colleagues or my student friends can do. That's great. Still, getting a school to provide the technology and getting people to accept that I can do the experiments is a different thing entirely. And that's what we need to push as blind people. We need to insist that, yes, we're using different technologies to accomplish the same thing, but you know what? As Dr. Jernigan would point out, left-handed people have accommodations that they need. Tall people have accommodations that they need. Extremely short people have accommodations that they need. We even have different restrooms for different genders. It's all accommodation. And the fact of the matter is that we are no different and should not be treated differently than anyone else. And we have to take charge of our own actions to make sure that the attitudes change along with the technology. As things grow, we need to insist and demand that we have the same access to being able to use that technology and the same access providing that technology by whoever provides it, as do sighted people. That is always going to be our job. It's unfortunate that it has to be that way, but it does need to be that way. Let's look at it another way. You know, every year we have Black History Month and we have Latino History Month and so on. And my wife likes to watch The View on ABC, and I kind of watch it too, and it's kind of fun. Sometimes they really go after some folks and so on. But during February and Black History Month, there are every day little vignettes talking about someone who was African-American who made a major difference and made a major contribution to society here in the United States. And they do it throughout the year for Latinos and so on. You know what? I don't hear anything during October, Meet the Blind Month. We're not there yet. Talk about Hollywood and all of its concepts of diversity and so-called inclusion. They're not. Even with what they're doing and what they say they're going to put in place, we don't see anything about blind actors and giving blind people the opportunity to become actors and be part of motion pictures and so on, or TV and so on, at the same level as others. Why not? We should be. We are the ones who have to push that. And we're the ones that have to demand that societal attitudes keep up with technology. We've done it and been very successful at times. We did it with Target, although I think there's been some slippage on the website, but basically Target is accessible because of the National Federation of the Blind. The iPhone and Apple products are accessible because of the National Federation of the Blind, although Apple has not gone that final step that they need to do, which is they do not make any demands on app developers to ensure that where it can be done, apps are accessible. And I submit that most every app in the App Store has some ability to be accessible. Yes, a lot of apps have graphics and pictures and so on. Understand that. That's what they do. Star charts and so on, for example, it's going to be a lot of pictures. But I ought to be able to manipulate those. I ought to be able to have access to the controls that make it possible for me to manipulate and ask somebody else then what is being shown rather than somebody else having to do it. I think I can think a lot faster about what I want as opposed to someone else who I have to take a long time to teach them how to somewhat think like I do or to try to explain what I want and then they do it. And hands-on is something that we should insist upon. It also means that we have to take the step of learning this stuff. We have to take the step of exploring technology and learning technology and truly seeing what works and what doesn't work. And it means that we have to be more experimental than a lot of times we are. I'm on a Zoom list, for example, and a lot of people come and ask a lot of questions about Zoom and they say they can't do this or that, or how do I do this or that? And a lot of times my reaction is, why don't you just go explore the commands? Yes, you can ask people, but you will learn a lot more if you do it yourself. It's the old thing about you can give somebody a fish or you can teach them the fish. We need to teach ourselves how to be more curious. We need to teach ourselves to have higher expectations for each of us and experiment on our own in whatever we do. It's got to be that way, or we're not going to be able to make the strides and the progress that we want to make. And so I really believe that technology, as good as it's getting, puts burden on us and it puts burdens on the rest of society that we need to make sure that they recognize to make sure that we are also included. You can't be partially inclusive. You can't just say, well, we include women in making Hollywood more diverse and inclusive, because you're not really dealing with inclusion. Either you are inclusive or you're not. And if you're inclusive, then everyone should be included and you can't have it any other way. So I think that it's important that we really recognize that, yes, we are making strides and we're going to continue to make strides. And the National Federation of the Blind, look at the announcement with Pearson Education last week. The National Federation of the Blind is establishing alliances and relationships second to none that will help blind people move forward. It's up to us to ensure that that continues by all of us availing ourselves of all of these things. And as a result, we enforce the value to the companies like Pearson of what's occurring. And that way, even more ideas will come to them. It's an ever-expanding universe, and we need to do our part of it. So, you know, Ron Brown mentioned my story, and I won't tell a lot of it here, except to point out a couple things. I have been in sales most all of my adult life, and I practice, I think, what I preach in all the things that I've said here. I mentioned earlier, I worked on the project that Ray Kurzweil and the National Federation of the Blind developed, and Ray Kurzweil talked about it during our banquet this year at our national convention, in the ways that we work together to make the reading machine a reality when no one else in the world would help Ray do it, because they didn't believe that Ray really had the technology that he said he did. We weren't sure either, but Ray convinced Jim Gashel finally, who went to Dr. Jernigan, and Dr. Jernigan finally agreed, let's go check it out. Because everyone brought technology to the National Federation of the Blind, and they said, we've got the greatest thing in the world, it's going to help blind people, and mostly none of it would really do that. But Ray had something different. And when Jim Gashel brought his own materials to Ray Kurzweil's lab in Massachusetts and started reading them and actually read what he wanted and read a print braille monitor, and I don't know what all he took up there, but he read a lot of stuff, and what do you know, the machine worked. And so the result of all that is that we were able to, oh, hush. I'm sorry, I didn't mute it. Anyway, what Ray Kurzweil did was worked with us, and we moved forward and developed this technology. And that developed a relationship that has gone on ever since, which is really pretty cool. We've developed other relationships. Pearson, I mentioned, we have developed a relationship with Apple, although I hope we go further with that. We've developed a relationship with Microsoft. I think that there's more to be done there, but we're working on it. And we are getting more blind people employed in positions with some of these companies. And that is really cool. But we need to do even more of it. And the only way it's going to happen is if each of us as blind people take the initiative and choose to learn what we need to learn and choose to develop our confidence to do the things that we want to have done and that we want to do. So when Jim Gashel brought that whole reading machine process to Dr. Jernigan and they saw that it read, we started a project, and I was hired to be part of that to actually set up reading machines around the country. I had never spent time away from home other than being in college. And suddenly in November of 1976, I'm on an airplane flying to Boston, 3,000 miles away from home in California, never done anything like that before. And it was scary having never done something like that. But you know what? I also realized I had to do that. I had to do it to prove to myself I could do it. I had to do it because I made a commitment to do it. And I also realized that we were possibly going to be part of some really exciting technology stuff. And for the next several years, I worked with Ray and of course, the National Federation of the Blind at the beginning, and then worked for Ray and did a variety of things and had other jobs in science and technology and high-tech equipment sales. And eventually went to work in the World Trade Center. And the reason I was able to do those jobs was that each job taught me things that I was able to use on the next job. And I believe that all of us need to treat everything we do and every day we live as learning experiences. There are always things to learn. And as I learned different kinds of things, I got skills that helped me as I went to other jobs. And again, I think that's something that we all need to do. There is no, I can't do it. We all have skills that we can bring to bear to get other jobs. We may not all go into high-tech sales. That may not be our gifts, but we do need to find our gifts. And we do need to all find the jobs that we can do, and we should search for them. And then when we find them, we need to make sure that the whole world knows that we're as good as anyone else at doing those jobs. That also means we need to make sure that we truly do as good a job, at least as anyone else, but we can do that. In any case, I had a number of jobs that eventually got me to the point where I was hired by a company, Quantum Corporation, and asked to open an office for them in New York City. And I chose to open that office in the World Trade Center, partly because we got a great deal on office space there. The World Trade Center was only about 80% occupied in 1999 and into the very beginning of 2000 because of the bombing that had occurred there in 1993. So we negotiated a really great rate for office space. I love to brag about this. $2 a square foot for 1,400 square feet in one of the most prime real estate areas of New York City. It took work, but we got it and we opened the office. And there I was on September 11th. Several things occurred once that office was opened. For me, as the person who ran the office for Quantum, I realized that I had obligations that I needed to fulfill, partly for me and partly for the staff that I was going to hire and began to hire, both in sales and support and so on. I needed to be the person that they would expect to manage them. And I've always believed that a boss shouldn't be someone who is a dictator. I've always believed that a good boss, a good leader, is a person who treats everyone in the office as a team member. One of the things that I said, to every salesperson I hired, I always said to them, now, I hired you because you proved to me or you convinced me that you could sell. And I'm not going to tell you how to sell. I'm not going to tell you where to sell. As, of course, as we find opportunities, we'll pass them along. But you are also being hired because you have your own group of people that you work with and companies that you work with and contacts that you have that you're going to go sell to. And that's great. But I will be a second member of your team. What you and I need to do is to figure out how I best can help you and add value to what you do. That's something that we'll have to work on together. One of my favorite stories about that is a gentleman named Kevin, who I hired, who was my best sales guy. And I said that to Kevin when he started. And he said, okay, I think that makes a whole lot of sense. And he asked me questions from time to time, and he asked blindness questions from time to time. In fact, Kevin loved to joke. He said, I don't believe that you're blind at all, because typically if we race, if we were like eating lunch downstairs and we were going back up to the office, we'd race each other. He'd go one way and I usually went a completely different way than he was able to go, because as the boss of the office, I could go through passages that he didn't get access to. And I usually won. So he was convinced that I could see anyway. And I said, nah, you're just slow. But Kevin one day came to me and he said, I got to tell you, Solomon Brothers, this was back in like early 2000, Solomon Brothers wants us to come and talk with them about our products. And they want us to convince them that we've got what they need. And they said that they didn't want me to come alone. They wanted me to bring my manager, someone who is in a position of authority with the company, which is why we opened the office there and why I ran it. And I said, okay. And then he said, I got to tell you, I didn't tell him you were blind. And I said, well, I'm glad you didn't, because that would have made me extremely angry. But I also knew what Kevin was really saying. He was saying, you're going to go in there, you're going to be different, and you're going to hit them right between the eyes with something that they don't get, and that'll help us. He also said, I don't know whether our products will do what they need. So this was like on a Wednesday, and the meeting was a week later on Thursday. The meeting was supposed to start at 10 o'clock, and we got there at about 10:01, deliberately. We were walking down the hall, the door to the meeting room was open, and people were talking about, well, where are they? They're not here yet. We turned into the meeting room, and everything went quiet, just like Kevin planned, by the way. There I am with my guide dog, Roselle. I'm carrying a laptop projector case. Kevin's got some things, and I've got my laptop also. And we just stood there a moment. No one was saying a word. And I turned to Kevin. I said, so where are we doing this? He said, okay, up here in the front. And so we went up to the front. And I started unpacking the laptop projector because we were going to show a PowerPoint presentation. I knew I needed to be the one to do that, both for Kevin and for these people. I had to do what they would expect any manager to do. And I had learned how to do that. I had a Braille script, by the way. My script not only had all the words that would appear on the slides, it had complete descriptions of all the pictures with each slide. Not only that, it actually gave me the information, so I wouldn't forget it, as to where the pictures would appear on the screen. So I could literally point over my shoulder and say, on the left side of your screen, you see, and on the right side of the screen, you see. And I could do that and point back behind me. And I practiced doing it. I could do that and never look away, which was an advantage. So while we were getting set up, I turned to my left, to the upper right-hand corner, if you're facing from back to front. And I said to the gentleman I heard as we were passing by, I said, hi, I'm Mike. Who are you? The guy didn't say a word. And I said, yeah, just want to know who you are. Who are you? And he didn't say a word. I said, don't be afraid of salespeople. We don't bite. And finally, I also said, by the way, I heard you when we walked by. Who are you? So finally, he introduced himself. And I said, great, Joe. Good to meet you. And tell me, why are we here? What are you looking for? And I went around the room and did that. And I got these people talking. And I knew by the time we were done with the introductions that our product wouldn't do what they wanted because they had told me a lot. But we went ahead and showed them the PowerPoint presentations and all that. And at the end, I said, and as you can see, our product won't do what you need. But I wanted you to see what we have because I wanted you to get a better background on tape backup products, which is what we were selling. And I will also, tell you, here's what products will work for you. My bosses would have shot me, of course, but there's more to the story. So the formal meeting ended and somebody came up to us and said, we're really mad at you. And I said, why? And he said, because usually during these things, we fall asleep because they're boring. And we can do that because people turn around and they're pointing to the screen. You never looked away. We didn't dare fall asleep. We forgot you were blind. I said, well, it doesn't matter if you'd fallen asleep. My dog's down here. Roselle's down here taking notes. We would have got you. 2 weeks later, we got a call from Solomon saying, again, we want to thank you for the presentation and your honesty. And we have another project. It's bigger than the last one. And because of everything you taught us, we know that your product is the only one that will really do what we want. Just tell us what it's going to cost and we'll order it today. That's, first of all, honesty in sales. But second of all, that's what I needed to do in order to make sure that we could establish the relationship. That is, I needed to take charge like anyone else would. There are a lot more stories like that. But I also learned in the World Trade Center what to do in emergencies and learn what to do if something ever happened and we had to evacuate. I couldn't look at signs, so I needed to learn all the information. And on September 11th, when the emergency actually occurred, everything just kicked in because by that time, I had developed a mindset. Every day I went into the World Trade Center, I asked myself, have you learned everything that you need to know? And what will you do today if there's an emergency? Well, one day it actually happened. And because I'd asked myself that so much, everything kicked in and there was no fear. Besides that, I was observing that my dog, Roselle, wasn't afraid. Other people were panicking. If you've never read Thunder Dog, the story of a blind man, a guide dog, and the triumph of trust at Ground Zero, I hope you'll get the book. Oh, yes, it's available on Bard, but you can buy it from Audible and you can get it on Amazon and you can buy the CD version. And of course, being a poor, starving author, we love people to buy books. But if you can't and just decide to get it from Bard, that's okay too. It is available and I hope you'll read it. It'll tell you a lot more of the story. But suffice it to say that, in fact, we did successfully go down and get out of the building because I knew what to do. I had taken on the responsibility, as I should, as the leader of my office, to learn what I needed to know. If I weren't the boss, I'd still do the same thing because how do I know who I can depend on at any given time? There were some people who did panic in the building that day that I never thought would, but they did. And my job was to stop that from happening. And we did. And the result is that we all made it out. And then people started asking me to speak and to talk about my experiences, which I've been doing for the past 19 years. Now we have COVID-19 and it's hard to say it this way, so I'm going to be real careful here. I'm not afraid of the virus, and Donald Trump says don't be afraid, but he doesn't get it, I don't think. I'm not afraid of the virus in the way of, oh my God, this is possibly going to get me. I respect it, and I use my concern and low-grade fear to help me stay focused and help me be aware of what I need to do to keep my chances of getting it down to zero or as low as possible. So my wife and I stay in. We don't travel. No one is inviting me to speak anymore. So income has dropped. We're going to be starting a new coaching program called Blinded by Fear. And it's not blind as in can't see it. It's blind as in people, all too many people, are so afraid of things that they become blind to how to move forward and they don't move forward. Some people call it paralyzed by fear. I'm choosing to use blinded by fear. So in the next couple of months, this coaching program will start. If any of you know anyone who has major fear of life changes for whatever reason, there's still people, for example, who won't fly because of September 11th, 2001. But if you know of people who are really afraid, my program is to help them learn to control those fears. I've realized that over the past 19 years, I've not talked about fear a lot from that standpoint. I've not really taught people how to do the same sorts of things that I did on September 11th. And so now we're going to do that. And I'm hopefully going to help people move on, and it will enrich their lives. So I'm excited about it. We're putting it all together, and you'll hear more about it over time. And hopefully President Riccobono will let us at least put an announcement out on the listserv, but we'll talk about that at some point. Anyway, I think in reality, what I'm really saying is as we move forward, we have to take responsibility to make sure that we can and do move forward. And each of us has to use every gift that we have to our maximum, to its fullest, to become as good as we can be. And if we do that, we in the National Federation of the Blind will make such great strides. I look forward to the day when The View will start to talk about people like Dr. Jacobus Tenbrook, one of the greatest constitutional law scholars of the 20th century, or Dr. Jernigan, who made so many strides for us, and Dr. Maurer, and President Riccobono, who drove the first car, among other things, completely independently as a blind person, and who continues to take us forward into our future. With that, I'm going to stop. I think we have a little bit of time if you'd like me to answer questions, Mr. President, or whatever you'd like to do. I'm here and ready.
Excellent presentation, Mike. Thank you so much for your time. We'll take a couple of questions. If anybody has any questions, please raise your hand and you'll be recognized. What a wonderful presentation.
We have 5529 with a question.
Hi. Yep. Mike, I do remember you from many years ago. I remember that you actually came to the Indiana School for the Blind. I believe it was for a graduation ceremony, believe it or not.
Right.
And ever since then, I actually went to public school, went to university, briefly contracted at a pharmaceutical company, and now I'm doing graduate school. So we're talking about more than 10 years ago at this point. Thank you so much for pointing out that technology is a double-edged sword, because clearly there are some great things that people could accomplish with technology, but there's still a long way to go. And I guess one example I'd like to give is home appliances, for instance. So I know that you talked about technology that helped you with science experiments, but I feel like life at home is sometimes overlooked. Sure. So we do have the Echo Dot and things like that. But what do you have to say about that topic? Because now that my family and I are going to get our new home, that's my number one concern, is finding accessible appliances. And
well,
I just don't know why it's not more.
There are appliances that are accessible, but you raise a good point. We need to get manufacturers to build in inclusion in home appliances overall. It's not that expensive to do. And a lot of times it's probably easier than they really think. It's education. And it is something, though, that we as a movement are doing. And we're talking about the Technology Affordability Act, among other things. But we're also working with different companies. But there are some areas where technologies are getting better. There is a microwave that Amazon has created that works with the Amazon Echo, which is cool. In fact, there are some companies in Europe. Bosch, for example, makes washers and dryers and dishwashers. And in Europe, already you can control them with apps. And I'm told that the apps are accessible. They have not introduced them in the United States yet. And I wish they would, although we bought our Bosch products when we built our house 4 years ago. Now, my wife, by the way, is in a wheelchair, so we had to build an accessible house. It's cheaper to build a house when you want to make it wheelchair accessible than to buy it and convert it. But we happened to talk to Bosch people, and that's how I learned about some of these things. And more apps are coming out that do control products. And you're right, it is an issue. There are things that are available that allow us to do a number of the things that we need to have done. But that is not in any way an area where everything is rosy and works as well as it should. And we're the ones that have to demand that changes. And I do not believe, as technology is being developed today, or in other areas, Wells Fargo Bank, for example, still, if you go to a teller window, the little machine has a keypad. And I had one guy from the Wells Fargo Bank tell me, well, it's got a keypad on it, so it's ADA compliant, but you can't do anything with the rest of the screen. And there are a lot of problems with technologies. It's not inclusive yet. And until it's truly inclusive, and until they also provide full acceptance of us as legitimate members of society, we won't have inclusion. So we do need to continue to work on it. But there are a number of things available today.
Alex Gilland has a question.
All right. Thank you for your question. Alex, what you got?
So near the end of your presentation, you were talking about a coaching program.
Mm-hmm.
About kind of getting rid of that fear and alleviating it. Could you expound on that and maybe give us some logistics?
Sure. Basically, there are a lot of things that happen to us, especially really serious, unexpected life changes. COVID-19 is one, right? So many people are afraid of it. And of course, in all seriousness, our political folks are not helping alleviate the fears. But COVID-19 is one. If you're in a serious automobile accident, I mentioned September 11th. And as I said, there are still people who won't fly today because of September 11th. They're afraid to fly. And there are things that causes those fears, and it's different for each individual. So I've decided we're going to create a course that we'll put online that people can take and go through that may help. And we're also going to offer full one-on-one coaching to take individuals and talk about fear and try to help them change their mindset so that when something happens or if something has happened in their past, they can get a better grip on it and they can learn to move forward and not be afraid of whatever happens in the future, and that they can become better at dealing with what's happened in the past. So if you go to my website, michaelhinkson.com, there's a place where you can sign up to get emails. And as we announce it and put things up, then we can certainly let you know about it. So you can go to michaelhinkson.com. There's a place to, as I said, sign up and just give us your email address and so on. I don't send lots of emails, so you're not going to hear from me every day right now or anything like that. I, at the beginning of the year, promised a newsletter every month, and with COVID-19, after it hit, even that didn't happen, but we're working on it. And the first thing that will happen is there'll be an ebook published that people will be able to get and download for free when they just sign up on our site. And then when they want to explore the program. So it'll be happening over the next couple months. We'll be creating some of the announcements and so on later this month. So you'll start to hear about it pretty soon, I think.
Excellent. I believe we'll take one more question and then we're going to move on.
Okay, we have Jack has a question. We're trying to get him on. There he goes. Jack?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, great. Excellent presentation. I agree with you completely regarding technology, kind of moving, having to make sure that the trajectory is forward rather than forward, one step forward, two steps back. As far as mindset, I do have to, regarding the laundry machines, I don't know if this is available for a consumer, like a individual house setup instead of like a large scale infrastructure, but there might need to be some more awareness raised of the Speed Queen washing machines. Those are smart. Those can be controlled with the app, and a Braille pan at my college dorm, a app combined with a Braille panel for all the buttons makes them fully, completely accessible, and they're mainstream. So,
our microwave isn't accessible except I put Braille labels on, and so I can use the microwave because I just put numbers on the number pad and so on. And sometimes we have to do that, and I'd rather do that if I can than just complain about it. I do look forward to the time when I don't have to take that initiative because the company will automatically do it. I noticed that Amazon, I mentioned the Amazon microwave. One of the things that you can buy, I think it's 99 cents, but I think that you also get a refund in some way, but it's like 99 cents. If you buy the microwave, you can also buy a Braille template that can go right on it and use it. And I think some companies are working to do some of that, but not nearly enough. And we need to really get more people to address the full accessibility issues that we want to see. But yeah, there are some out there that are like washers and dryers that are better than others. And hopefully we'll see more uniform inclusion across the board but we'll be the ones that bring it about. And we shouldn't accept no for an answer. We don't need to abuse people. We need to be firm with people. We need to educate them. But if we do it right, then we'll make new friends and we won't have problems from them in the future.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Mike, again, for all you do. Will you be making appearances in Indiana at Independent Science and working over there, or will you be in and out?
Well, planning on doing something when the world lets us fly. But if anyone wants to reach out, as I said, you could go to michaelhinkson.com and sign up for emails, and also that I'll know about it. But you're also, anyone who wants to is welcome to email me. Again, that's easy. It's mike@michaelhinkson.com. I do respond to emails. So feel free to email anyone has any questions or wants to talk further or whatever. Mike@michaelhinkson. That's, well, I'm in the agenda, michaelhinkson.com. And I will respond.